Before we head into this episode, just a heads up that this episode was pre-recorded from late 2025. Some of the films mentioned won't be the most recent releases, but if you want to stay up to date with the industry and see what's going on, then check out our socials at alwaysonfilm.pod, or you can stay tuned for our upcoming season 2. Enjoy!
Have the intro bit ready.
Should I get my clappy hands ready?
Yes, one second. Let me, we also need to wave at me.
I should never be clappy hands ever again.
Horrible.
That is actually disgusting.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to Always On Film, brought to you by Transmission Roundhouse.
Hello, welcome to today's episode. Today we have the lovely Lucy Rose Lennon with us, talking all things Dodger and drama school experience. And yeah, it's a really exciting one.
Well, thank you so much, Lucy Rose, for coming and joining us for our episode today. We like to start our episodes with our guests with some icebreaker questions. And so we just wanted to ask you, what are your all-time favourite films?
All-time favourite?
Yeah. Or even a comfort film.
Oh, comfort film.
I was going to say, that's two different questions.
Anything, yeah.
Yeah, I feel like Narnia was a comfort film during COVID. I was like, yeah, magic, White Witch, although she's kind of evil.
But like kind of an icon.
Yeah.
Tilda Swinton.
Yeah, absolutely.
Legend.
Yeah. I think favourite film would be a Compartment Number 6.
Oh, I haven't seen that.
I haven't seen that.
It's a Finnish film director. The guy from Anora, Euro, is in it.
Oh, no way.
And it's a Finnish student travelling on a train, and it's one of the best things I've ever seen.
Really?
Yeah, and it's also, I guess, underrated that no one...
Yeah,
really
I was going to say.
Yeah. Wow, we should check that out.
I was going to say, that's going to go on my list now.
Yeah. And I loved him in Nora as well.
Oh,
and I'd never seen him in anything.
Well, this, he plays this drunk Russian man on a train, and he's absolutely amazing. Like, he's so alive.
He's love that.
Okay, that's going to go on my to watch list.
Yeah. It will be discussed next week.
Yes. Do you have, like, a favourite cinema that you love to go to?
In Melbourne or in London?
In the world.
No, the world. But don't you love cinemas? Like, really, there's a cinema in Melbourne called the Rivoli, which is a really beautiful old cinema. In London, I would have to say the Bloomsbury Curzon, I feel.
Yeah. The Bloomsbury, okay, yeah.
That one's
That's
nice.
Just one of my favourites, kind of tucked away, cozy. I used to go there after drama school and...
It's very comforting.
There's so many in London.
Yeah, so many.
And then... Do you have any hot takes? Any film you think is overrated or underrated?
Quite a few.
We yapped about this a long time yesterday.
Do you know what? I would have to say Saltburn, I felt, got a lot of hype and it just wasn't my cup of tea.
I see that.
I'm right there with
you. I didn't mind promising it. I like the director, but I just didn't really, it wasn't my thing. But it seemed to like... Everyone went nuts.
I fear Wuthering Heights is going to do the same as well.
Yeah, I think it's because her directorial view of things is really good. Like, the cinematography of that film is stunning and beautiful. Yeah. But I think because I went into it wanting so much from it because everybody was talking about it. Mm. And I watched it and I was like, okay, so is this it?
Oh, yeah.
I was like, okay.
I know what you mean.
Like, phenomenal, like, acting and cinematography. But I was like, I agree. I was like... Because it was so hyped.
Yeah.
I was expecting it to be this phenomenal masterpiece.
Yeah. It kind of had, like, Brideshead Revisited vibes, the book.
I love that book.
I don't know.
I was going to say Kitty recommended that book to me. Yeah. It's such a brilliant book. Yeah.
I think because it had been pitched to me that way, I was like, oh, my God, it's going to be like Brideshead Revisited. And then I was like, oh, everyone's a bit weird.
But
we'll see how Wuthering Heights goes.
I was going to say, we'll see how that goes,
What was your, like, entry into this industry? Like, did you always know that you wanted to go into acting? Was there, like, a moment in your childhood you were like, yes, I want to do this?
I never was that kid that's like, I want to be Lucille Ball on screen. Do you know what? Like, I have very artistic parents. And so my mum was a drama teacher and directed the high school musicals, and she couldn't afford a babysitter, so I was kind of forced...
To sit in rehearsals?
To be in the plays.
Oh, cool.
So, like, Stop. Guys and Dolls, Pugsy Malone, me there, like, with a gun, and then, like, dressed as a scarecrow and bushel and a peck, and, like, the Salvation Army. So, yeah, it was kind of just a lot surrounded by a lot of theatre and art as a kid. My dad was a musician.
Nice.
And I guess... At high school, it was
the one subject I could really, yeah, I just, like, locked in.
Yeah. Mm.
And so, I think a teacher once said, like, how did you get her to learn her lines and pay attention on stage? And it's like, I could just focus.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
I think art, drama and literature were kind of my saviours in that regard. I wasn't very good at maths.
No, yeah.
I was the same.
Yeah, and then, like, I guess, yeah, the school musicals, I kind of just loved musical theatre, even though I don't do that now, but... Mm. That was, I just felt so free, like playing Miss Hannigan in Annie at like 17, where you're just like, you know,
it's so gritty,
and you're like a 17-year-old. Yeah. It was really,
So you went you went to drama school after school, right? Was that musical theatre? Was that general education?
No, it was acting. I did, I went to drama school in Australia straight after school, and I was quite young to get in, and then we kind of rolled around on the floor for 3 years.
Yeah, I was going to say, I think that's a universal experience of acting school.
Dressing as clowns, going out, it was so much fun, and we had such a great year level. And then I kind of did a bit of TV after that. And then I just had this desire to go to England. So I came over and did a Shakespeare course. And met some great people. And that was where they were like, you should come to RADA. And that's kind of where that chapter began.
Makes sense,
it's drama school. But, so that was kind of it. And then it was this whole thing after that of, like, London, Australia. I was like, oh, God, what have I done to myself? Like, it's like a blessing but also a curse to be a part of two places.
Because I also, like, not that the information probably is super, super different from each other, but I'm guessing that education in, like, acting probably varies from, like, what you learned in Australia and here. Or would you say that, like, fundamentally it was the same?
I think fundamentally, like, the training in Australia would have similar techniques and practices and, I guess, methodology from, like, Swarovski, and there's the same kind of things there. I suppose it's just a bigger thing. Like, you know, we had West End Theatre right next to our school.
Big time.
You know, there was a bit more of a prestige, I suppose. But, I think as training goes, the training in Australia is just as good as it is here. It's a matter of opportunity and how, you know, like, I feel in England you could finish one of the drama schools here and go and do a play, like a Jez Butterworth play, and have a small part but learn from watching everyone or understudy, whereas in Australia there's less big productions because the money's just not there. We have a lot of two-hand or four-people plays, but we don't have those massive casts. Obviously, since COVID, that's things are shrinking.
Yeah, definitely.
But that, I think you kind of get those opportunities on stage here to keep going as an actor. That's what I found in Australia. Those theatre gigs were quite competitive and harder to get.
Definitely. No, I went to a film school in LA. So I have a lot of friends that are still over there trying to do theatre and film as well, and they have a similar experience, you know, because so many of my friends have moved here now just because opportunity for smaller parts is bigger here, if that makes sense.
Also,
because you learn so much from, like you said, being an understudy, having a little part in something. They're still, like, such a big production, where LA has really good theatre, but it's very limited because it's such a film-based city. So it's always very different,
It's quite interesting because a lot of drama schools in their third year curriculum are connected to theatres, and some in the West End. Like, I know Oxford School of Drama, in your third year, you go and do a show at the Southwark Playhouse. And then, even though you're based in Oxford, you can invite agents and stuff to London, which I know, like, some of my friends who went to, like, Guildford School of Acting and stuff struggled being in a drama school, in a really great one, but outside of London, and getting them to be persuaded to come all the way on a train to come and visit you rather than just hopping on the tube for, like, 20 minutes.
It's
so important. And, like, you've already, like, kind of broken into the theatre scene and had an experience on a stage in potentially a West End venue or something already before you've even graduated. And I suppose, like, the theatres and the drama schools are helping each other kind of thing, because you're going to sell them out, aren't you? All your friends and family are going to come. So it's clever. And it's so, like, I don't know, I just think that's such a clever way to support each other and keep it going.
So when it comes to film then, I mean, given that you now do international TV and everything, like, big productions, knowing the industry over here and how that kind of works, and Australia, how do you think those two vary? Like, not just theatre, do you think it's similar to the fact that Australia does have a film industry as well, but is it smaller than here?
I think the industry in Australia is, yeah, no different. Like, you know, I think there's a misconception that things made in Australia about pedophiles and murderers in the bush, like Wolf Creek, or you know, like that we do make good and there's some great horror films like Talk to Me, which is fabulous.
I was going to say I saw that.
Yeah, it's great. I think the misconception is that we make dark films, but we're also brilliant at comedy, like Kevin Kim or Colin from Accounts.
Well, show you have really good comedic timing on Dodger. like that shows. How did you? So you've been part of Artful Dodger, right? So that's international in the sense of like crew. Or would you? Is that?
No, it's probably more of a local crew.
More of a local crew.
From Perth.
Yeah.
But in terms of like crew, I feel like crews are the same in any kind of production, whether it be high budget or independent. I think
just the train that gets rolling.
They're just all as hardworking. Each project, what I've experienced seeing crew, I feel like they treat each project exactly the same. Everything is professional and runs as smoothly as it can.
Yeah,
I think mostly definitely Australian crew because it's an Australian production
with
a few British leads. But obviously has the international pull of Disney
and everything behind that. It's quite impressive.
It's cool.
I also think it's nice like to take a moment to just like highlight how important like everybody behind the like scenes is. Like crews do so much work. I think sometimes you don't forget about it, but I think if you're like, especially if you're training to be an actor or something, then you go into productions and you see how many intricate moving parts there actually are. You're like, oh wow.
Yeah. And like the reason actors are treated like babies sometimes is because like they don't want your costume to get ruined. So they'll be like, no, they'll follow you to the bathroom.
They're
like, okay, I've got to go to the bathroom. But they're like, no, she's got, and you know, so like, it's just a protection because the costumes cost a lot. And then there's, you know, there's so much work that goes into how we present on screen. Like, I just turn up and speak and do a bit of acting opposite someone. But the things that happen around me, that's like the lighting, like everything, you know, exactly, it's like lighting up there. And the lighting for every person, every skin colour is so different because they want everyone to look amazing. And lighting, sound, you know, hair and makeup. Like, I could never do my hair.
The way that they do it.
We were just talking about this before we started. Like, your hair in the show.
And it's funny, you're like, is it a wig? And the first AD, Charlie, at the very end of filming, she's like, is your hair a wig? I'm like, Charlie, I've been in the makeup chair for hours. 2 hours. Like, if I had a wig, it wouldn't be that long. So, yeah, they wouldn't let me cut my hair. The whole time I was like, come please cut my hair off. And they're like, no. Because they wanted it long because I made it easier to braid and put it all up.
Give it more styles, right?
And we're not meant to go too much into season two, but, like, some of the hair that they did is just epic.
Such very cool.
And like the period hair, like the talent and expertise those particular hair and makeup artists have. You know, I think there's someone here who worked, actually there is a British hair and makeup artist who's working on Pride and Prejudice at the moment because she's got a lot of expertise in like period
hair.
Specific thing for everything, but
The research that goes into all of that is insane as well. So many like intricate details of like colours and braid styles and making sure everything's
like,
lined up.
That's so like all of my experience was stage and I never even stepped foot on a set, even like training at drama school, I never stepped foot on a set until I was doing like extra work or maybe like a feature role, but like for these really big productions. And that's what shocked me was like stepping into the hair and makeup and there'd be like pictures everywhere. There'd be like mood boards, there'd be everything. And all I had to do was just like sit down and wait. But there's been like months of conversations before that's even happened that obviously you're not there to listen to. It's crazy. And also just like a 20-minute filler scene. And they would have had like an hour's chat about what your hair will be like, what if it's a side parting or a middle parting, and you're like, I just have to sit here and have it done to me. Like, I don't, like, it's just so interesting.
I think that was like one of the first moments of walking on to production for Dodger season one was how much everyone else had an idea of who your character was. And that then informed your choice. Well, like, I still had a... And then there were little comments of, like, oh, poor Fanny. And I'm like, no.
Not poor Fanny.
Fanny is a powerhouse.
Yeah, it is.
So there were, like, little intricate details that you got from the costume designer, the hair, and then you're kind of like, because I, for the when I first read Fanny, I imagined her in like lace-up boots, like stomping about,
yeah,
and like hair falling out and a little bit messy. Whereas yeah, they were like, no, she's prim and proper. Everything is perfect. I was like, interesting.
You're like, okay,
yeah, I see that. But you know, yeah, it's a collaboration. It's not just your character, yeah, and fully, also like the showrunner James, who you know, spent 10 years working on this.
Yeah.
Like he created this role,
yeah,
and then I kind of saw it and brought it to life. But I think I was one of the directors who was like, oh, that character was quite plain on paper at first. I was like, no,
and you're like, no, there was so she's much to her.
She's so exciting.
Yeah,
and David Thewlis said, you know, who was like, this is one of the best. Yeah. She's so funny.
Yeah.
Yeah, just like hilarious. She plays the harp badly.
Yeah.
I rewatched that scene and I was like, how did you keep a straight face? Because then there's also the presentation of, like,
and the dress art was falling down.
Yeah. And the swan as well.
I know. I was
gonna say. Oh, gosh, yeah, it's so weird because I've just shot season two and I'm like, what happened?
What happened?
Yeah, I know. Like, what happened? Did you ever watch it back? How are you with watching yourself? I was going to say such a dumb question, but how are you with that?
I watched, of course, wanted to see everything come together. Yeah. I think once for me.
Yeah.
I know other actors that watched it multiple times. I think I watched it a little bit before shooting season two.
Yeah, it's like a little refresh. Like, yeah.
But obviously that was 2 years ago, so I've grown a bit and kind of like, okay, I've got to find that again.
Yeah. Yeah.
Do you think saying that you've grown a bit, do you think you bring that to your character as well, the experiences you've had in those years, or do you try to really differentiate, you know?
Yes, I can't say too much about the character in season two, but yeah, I think naturally that can happen.
Mm.
I think with the writer knowing me, but I you still have to find, I don't know, it's still in you, right?
Yeah.
It's just there's a youth and naivety, and I think as you get older that you start to play different characters, but she's also a romantic, so you can still access that, like a 50-year-old can access a romantic
100%.
Or a child, you know, and a 21-year-old can, so it's I think I was nervous because I was like, oh my god, I'm so different now after 2 years, but then once you're in it you're kind of like, oh wait, I get this. It's like riding
it's
a bike.
Fine,
first day terrifying, but once you're in it you're like, she's so lively and fun and energetic.
You wore some incredible dresses and like bright colors. Did you have any say in like the costume fittings beforehand, or did you kind of just turn up and try on loads of different stuff?
They kind of had like a
mood board for
it. Yeah, mood board ready. Yeah. But I can't say too much from season two, but I'm very excited for everyone to see
Oh, I can't wait.
Because there's a storyline within just the costume. It's,
interesting.
Like, we have a new costume designer, but both absolutely incredible.
Mm.
On season two, I think Marion did the dressmaker and a few other things. But it's just epic.
Yeah.
Like, epic.
I'm excited to see it now.
Like, new dress every,
Nice.
Whereas season one was less because,
absolutely. So going back to the roots, how was that audition process like? Like,
I
was going to say, what do we remember of that?
The audition process. interestingly, so I was living in the middle of the countryside, like 2 hours out of Melbourne, and I ended up getting this tape come through, and I asked a friend in England to read with me on Zoom. And then I sent it off, and then I was helping my mum move out of this little country property. So the house was empty, there was nothing there, and my brother was there too. And then at 6 p.m. on the Tuesday night, I get a call from my agent saying, you've got a call back on Zoom at 9 a.m. tomorrow. And I was okay. And then the new owners of this property were going through, and the real at that time at 9 a.m.
Oh.
And I was like, I can't drive back to Melbourne. Like, I can't go to a cafe. Like, where am I going to do this audition?
It's out in the little corner somewhere.
I was like,
and you need room.
And
like,
I was like, can we push these new owners? And they're like, they're not budging. And I was like, Sonia, mum's like, I'll call the local council. So she calls Peter, this artist that runs the Red Rock Chapel and Gallery.
Yeah.
This is like middle of nowhere. So like, I go and set up my little screen, my little camera in a chapel that's been converted into a gallery.
Stop.
Wow. So I'm then driving through paddocks at like 8:30 in the morning.
Yeah,
for this, like
ready to go.
Callback. And so then I log on and the casting, it's like, oh, are you connected to your phone? Like, do you have normal internet? And I was like, no, just my phone internet. And then it was the director and then Maya Mitchell playing my sister.
Yeah.
And the director's like, God, the acoustics are amazing. Like, where are you?
And
I was like, in a chapel. I don't really just have a place at the moment. I'm in a chapel. And then I like showed them. I'm like, check out these paintings.
Oh my gosh.
Like all these paintings on the wall. And they were like, this is kooky, but
that's probably very up to Fanny though, isn't
it? Yeah, I was going to say, yeah.
I was like, thank you, God.
Yeah.
But funnily, I found out like at the wrap party of season one, or maybe this season, they were like, yeah, your audition tape was like cutting in and out.
Yeah.
So Millie,
Millie,
I didn't. The connection wasn't great, which I didn't find out till much later, and I was like, that's so interesting.
Yeah.
But
honestly, good that you didn't know, because I would have probably been so nervous. Yeah. Like during the audition, if I would have known that I keep cutting out.
Right? Exactly. So that you do have to, if you ever do have that, sure your connection is.
Yeah.
Like, really good.
Was it all?
And you're not using your phone as internet.
Yeah.
Don't be in a chapel.
Don't be in a
chapel. Yeah, I was going to say, yeah. It's like something spiritual in there.
Yeah. Everyone needs to find a pizza from Red Rock Chapel.
Literally.
Literally.
He was like, we've got this whole theatre, black box theatre. I was like, no, I think I'll use the chapel. The lighting was quite nice. So.
Yeah.
And then that day I got a call from my agent. She's like, you've got an offer. And I'm like,
no way, on the same day?
On the same day.
Wow. And you hadn't met Myra in person or anything?
Just on Zoom.
Wow.
Yeah, so I booked that. Not even, they didn't see my legs. So
yeah. I was going to say, even like your heights, like to play sisters.
I didn't even send a little thing.
Wow.
But yeah, so that, my agent's like, you've got an offer. And I think they were really struggling to find Fanny.
Yeah.
They'd been auditioning for ages, so... I didn't even know how big they were. Like, I was like, "What's the role?" Like, "What?
Yeah, like, what is it?"
And then, like, 8 episodes. You're flying up to Sydney next week. I was like,
"Wow!"
And then I was on set.
That was
so
quick.
It was like,
wow.
It was fast.
I was going to say, I always feel like you either hear stories like this, where the turnaround is so quick, or you hear like stories of people waiting for like
months, 3 months, 6 months.
Yeah,
or you assume it's a rejection, and then you're like,
exactly. And then they get the call and they're like, oh, yeah.
I think it's crazy. It's quite refreshing, because now if I do something, I let it go after. I'm like, into ether, because of how quick that happened.
Yeah.
I'm kind of like, you know what? If they want me, they'll grab me.
Yeah, if it's meant for me, it'll happen.
Yeah.
But then I think sometimes they can come back, maybe when they can come back to tapes and go, okay, what, you know. But
yeah,
it's
all very different.
I don't know the process, but.
Yeah.
That's so interesting.
Yeah.
Because like the girls know I had like an audition earlier this year, and I like based my life on it. I was like, oh my God, this is going to change my life. And I would be like, no news is good news, right?
Yeah. We get like 2 texts a day of her being like, so I haven't heard anything, but that's good, right?
But there's nothing on IMDb yet, right? Yeah, literally. I was like,
I'd be like, yay, we're going to be okay.
Yeah.
The casting is like some celebrity. Like, yeah, that's okay.
Yeah, that makes sense.
I need to do what you do though, because I torture, but like, I like put notifications on IMDb. Like, someone else has joined the casting department.
We share the same IMDb Pro account.
Yeah.
So when she starts tracking people, and I keep getting notifications of like, this person was added to this
thing. I'm stressing
thing.
You out as well. You're like, Imogen, stop. Like,
I mean, no.
I turned my notifications off.
Yeah, actually just like out of it.
Yeah, I think the audition is a way of having fun and getting to play that role. Like, that's your opportunity, and whatever comes after doesn't matter. It's hard to channel, like, to flip that in your brain, because there is so much rejection. And statistically, it's very difficult to book some massive roles. Mm. But, you know, I think if you can go, I get the chance to do this, have a great time.
Yeah.
Auditioning is like, you know, but... It's like, if you can just change that, or if you have to go in the room, which doesn't always happen, but it's happening more now, to go like, this is my time, this is my space, to, you know, not theirs,
even though
it isn't, you know, but...
That's really nice to look at it that
way. I think you have to, otherwise you'll eat yourself up, because majority, like even some of the biggest stars, they are facing rejection, or they're facing films that are losing funding, or it's being an artist is...
Yeah.
Mostly
kind
rejection.
Of
as a writer, you've got, you know, people rejecting your words all the time, and it's something you have to learn to not take to heart, I think.
Yeah, like, yeah. I think understanding that it doesn't really have anything to do with you.
Yes.
You know, especially like casting directors.
And you go through stages, obviously, sometimes you're like...
like it is me.
And then other times you're like, yeah, cool, she's right, she's perfect.
And it'll be like multiple things falling at once and you're like, wow, guys, like, I can't take this all on.
No, exactly. Because at the end of the day, like, casting directors know what they're after. And I think that's probably, you know, where you were saying that you saw Fanny in such a way and then you came to set and you were like, oh. But, like, they probably saw that you saw something, what they wanted to see. So that's why they went with
her. That they haven't seen in someone else.
So, like, people know what they're after. And then it's just, like...
They just need to see someone do it.
I think living in London, different. Like, I was living in the middle of the country, so you know, cut off from society.
Yeah,
I was,
you couldn't compare yourself.
I was crocheting. I was somewhat living in 1850.
Me. She's in her little crochet.
I love crochet.
Right?
I love crochet.
And then I think knowing, like, some interesting British girls I've met here, I kind of went, oh, I can do this. I can do this accent. Yeah. I can do this, even though, and she's kind of artistic and unhinged. And I was like, I can do that. It's definitely like, I guess sometimes you find roles come to you and they make sense. But other times you might get a role and you're like, I just like, I could do this, but I know I'm not going to get it. Or
I know it's not mine.
Someone else. And that's when you already start thinking of, unless you kind of try and channel whatever that is. But,
You know, I remember seeing an interview last year. It was, I think it was Will Poulter. It was a warfare interview. And he had three movies coming out last year. And
What was the other one?
Death of a Unicorn. And there was one other
one.
And like Kit Connor said something to him, like making a joke, like, oh, you've got three movies. Like, look at you. Blah, blah. And he was like, no. There's been like years of nothing. He was like, there's been years of nothing. Like, it's just all like happened now.
Exactly. Again, such a quick turnaround. Yeah. Like, if something's meant for you, it will literally like be like,
fall in your place. Yeah.
The woman that plays my mother, Susie Port, I love her dearly.
She's so good as well.
Yeah.
She's brilliant.
Yeah.
She's a phenomenal actress in Australia. And, you know, she went to London and, you know, like, she's stayed in Australia and is brilliant, you know, working a lot over there. But I think, she always says to me, like, what is meant for you? Well, you know, you're meant to be here. And I think it's important to know that if something doesn't happen. Like, I was meant to have a big 9-month tour.
Yeah.
But then it fell through because of COVID. And had I been doing that tour, I would never have done the audition for Dodgers. So there's certain things of like, when things do fall through, the cosmos, I think, it tends to show what you need in life or what, you know, what is for you. And to try and not be beaten up by that, but to go, okay, this is what I'm doing now. And to trust. You know? Easier said than done, but
So how have you found after season one came out? I mean, people loved that show. People loved that show.
Yeah,
online especially. Yeah. Like, how did that, like, did you see fan edits? I was going to say, did anything, like, did you see it be loved as much as, like, we saw it be loved?
I don't know. I definitely got, like, messages on Instagram.
Yeah, they're like, oh my
TikTok.
God, I love you.
Yeah.
Fanny, you're so underrated.
Yeah.
I should have more scenes.
Justice
like, thank
for Fanny.
You. Like, thank you. Whoa. There's lots of funny TikTok videos that, like,
hilarious,
just like
yeah.
really corny pop songs. And,
yeah.
Quite sweet, you know, people making little sister videos of Belle and Fanny.
Yeah.
And then even like seeing, I think someone recently predicted season two and I was like, ha, ha.
And you're like, oh, look at that.
But it was quite sweet. I don't know, it just kind of, I just, I don't know, I have no expectations with it, but I think it's a show that deserves, I think there's so much like hard work and
so much love
talent
for it,
and creativity and you've got such a phenomenal cast and like James the showrunner, you know, he did his PhD in 19th century medicine and he's been working on it for 10 years and it's his ideas and
I didn't know that. That's incredible.
He he's been working on it for 10 years, so basically it's kind of his baby and he's so he's a dramaturg as well.
Yeah.
Like, he'll talk about your story and you'll really kind of get into the nitty gritty. He'll ask, like, is this line, you know, you can have a conversation if something's not working. If you're one of the lead, you know, it's a really special project and it's full of really cool people.
Yeah.
And we're all just very lucky to be there.
Yeah.
Even though the corsets are painful, but
I can imagine. I remember back in LA, I did like a, we called it styles class, so it's basically like Victorian era, whatever, like, you know, no, learning the cool. different styles of how you're holding yourselves, how you're dressing, etc. And oh,
sorry, my phone just fell.
And they put me in a corset as well, and I was like, I do not like this, I cannot breathe, my rib cage.
Well,
and that was for like 1 hour a week. So I was going to say you're probably in. I was going to say you're probably in there like, I don't know, all day, every day.
Yeah. And also because of timing, like it takes 45 minutes to like dress and undress, and so then you're waiting on set. But there's a real like anatomy to the body. Like you've got these costume designers who really who have studied costume and they know how to tie it and tighten it where the soft parts of your skin are so that you can breathe. There were times where it probably it wasn't tight and then I was like, oh, like, that's not. But I probably didn't. I was probably like, no, tighter there, tighter there.
Yeah.
And you're like, why did I do that?
Yeah.
But, you know, it's a part, but like it informs everything. Like it allows
you to. I was going to say, do you feel like it helps you get into the character?
Completely. Yeah. Completely. Yeah. Like it's heavy in the layers and in the heat, especially in Australia and Sydney. But that, you know, gives you the posture. That's what they would have done.
Yeah, that would
then.
Like pulls you up. Yeah.
It's, if anything, it's quite good. I think like a corset and like any role would be great for
you.
So,
focused
on it. I'm like, put me in a corset, please. Like, I don't
know.
Do
we put one on you starting now? Excuse me. Has anyone got a corset for us, please?
I really want to ask about, like, when season two was renewed, do you remember, like, where you were when you found out and, like, who you called?
Yeah. Were you in a chapel again?
Yeah, it was Peter from Red Rock Chapel.
Yeah, funnily enough, I was in Sydney at the Equity Ensemble Awards. We're up for Best Ensemble for Dodger.
Oh, wow.
And a few of us were going and my agent, like, calls me and I'm, like, getting ready. I'm already running. Like, yeah. Like, so I'm just letting you know, like, season two is being renewed. And I was like... And I think it was because we were going to the awards, there was some Disney people there and they wanted us to know before.
Yeah.
I think,
that's really good timing then. Because I guess you're excited for that.
And you're with, were you with the cast, like, straight away?
I was with Maya, who plays my sister, and Nicholas Burton, who plays Sneed.
Nice.
Who else was there? I think most, everyone was kind of away. It was a... Yeah, it's Sydney Theatre Company. And
that's so nice you were together. It was like celebrate.
Yeah. I think it was Maya knew this whole time.
Oh, she did?
Did she?
So I think she was like, they have to find out. I can't go to this event and not tell them. Like.
Imagine she just slips out. She's like, oopsie.
It's super exciting. I'm very lucky and I'm very excited for everyone to see what comes. Aww.
I think the fandom is really excited for that as well.
I think they had like a petition, like, at the B season two, which was
I was going to say, because I didn't even realize that was up for discussion. I just thought, like, oh yeah, definitely they'll renew that. And then I remember opening TikTok, I think it was, and I had like 3 or 4 videos back to back of being like, oh my god, bring it back, how dare you. And I was like, oh, I didn't know this was happening. And then like a few weeks later I saw it was renewed and I was like,
there's so
good
many
job, guys.
There's so many petitions.
Good job,
like,
guys.
We were talking the other day about this show called The Society on Netflix, which like had me in a chokehold in COVID. Yeah. Like it was so good.
Me too.
And it was like they actually announced it was renewed for a season two.
And then they cancelled it.
And then
it,
they cancelled it and these petitions went crazy. It never got picked up again.
It's a tricky time to get things greenlit and made, you know.
I think it was a timing because COVID and everything.
COVID. Like, even, you know, people are up for BAFTAs and these shows don't get renewed. It's just, it's very, I don't know.
TV's scary like that,
And it's scary that even though something can be so popular and have such a huge fan base, you're still not guaranteed a green light for a new season. Do you know what I mean? It's
much. Some things are... definitely guaranteed, like the money's there and they've paid, but it's very dependent on so many different factors, viewing and you know, there's a lot that is, we've got so many streaming platforms now, there's a lot that gets lost, and like, to get, you know, you've got to do the right kind of publicity and everything to get people knowing about it and watching it, otherwise it falls through. And you know, for a show like The White Lotus or...
Yeah.
It's rare for shows to get that, you know...
Yeah, like, to explode like that after a season.
And it's like, it's really... It's also, it's a bit of a tangent, but like seeing shows go back onto Netflix that were popular years ago and then get a resurgence of new fans, like things from like Skins went back on there after being on E4, like My Mad Fat Diary I think was on like Channel 4 or something.
And there's not a lot of like new writing. There is, but it's not being picked up because everyone wants to watch what's
remakes,
which is okay as well, but
I think sometimes it's like the comfort of going back to things you already know, and then studios like know that that works, if that makes sense.
Yeah, there's already a fan base. Yeah, completely.
It's like redoing all the original like Disney princess films and stuff. Like they just know that it's guaranteed.
But I think that's why this was so endearing with Dodger, though. Everyone loved it and was like, this is such an original story. Really wanting it to get renewed, and then when it did, everyone was just so excited for it.
Yeah. Well, it was like, it was a spin-off, so it was so, it's so different from
Dickens.
Dodger gets on a ship and goes to Australia, you know, and that's all that happens in Oliver Twist. But it's like this whole other world with all these kooky it's kind of like its own thing, really, but it's got the two archetypes, you know, Fagin and Dodger, but everyone's like, oh yeah, Lady Fanny Fox. I'm like, no, she's not in the original.
I was gonna say she's not in there, darling.
You know, but she's still got there's the comedy and that kind of satire and the, you know, things that come out of Dickens stories are still very much in this, so
that's so interesting.
What's
it like then working on a show that does have that sort of presence of Dickens? Like, how present was that when you were making it, or was it just more focused on it being an original thing? Because obviously you've got, as you just said, Dodger and Fagin, but then all these original characters, like, was there any, how present was...
I guess you've got Oliver Twist in season one, who's...
It's a fun little surprise, I think.
There's a few little twists and turns. I don't know, I think... It's its own thing. I think it's definitely got the kind of darkness and the comedy that comes from that. Yeah. But it's also like Sherlock Holmes, Sweeney Todd. Sweeney Todd, but you know,
With like the surgery and stuff, you've got like the gritty...
Like Grey's Anatomy in the 1850s. But it's it's a unique... In it, so you, there's a lot of different kind of Dickens spin-offs. And I don't think...
So many,
It's not like an original... you know, film that is The Bleak House, or it's not, but I think the writer has studied a lot of Dickens, and it is within the writing and the language is in that kind of like world and era.
Makes a lot of sense, huh?
Well,
do you, is there any, having had that experience in anything, what would be some advice, I guess, to people that have a similar journey to yours, but that are much, much earlier on? So, like, you know, I think already what you said with the audition process and handling rejection, like, making sure that you know that that is your space and it's not their space, even though they might be looking for something. But is there any other words of wisdom?
Words of wisdom.
That you have, I mean, especially because, you know, I think actors are so ambitious and want to achieve so much and want to do so much. And it's so intimidating.
It's hard. It's definitely hard. It's you know, it's not an easy feat to... obviously, there's much harder careers and much more important, you know, people saving lives out there. But there's definitely... you've got to have a bit of resilience and perseverance, I think. But I don't know. My advice would just be, like, try and stay curious. Try and stay open as much as you can. Don't let all the things that are going on affect your work and your art and your craft. I think, for me, booking a role, like... I think, like, keeping it simple... don't overcomplicate things, and I love it. It's important to, like, I think stay simple and do the things you love and find things outside of acting that you love.
I was going to say, like, some balance, right?
Or like cooking, or even if you just, like, want to read a play, crocheting, or other forms of creativity, if you've got all this energy and it's not happening in acting, or putting on your own work, filming something on your phone, like... just making stuff with people so that, you know, because it is hard. And I think there are ways to stay creative and to not let, you know, the lack of funding or things affect your process. And to just trust, I think, and not force anything.
That's good.
But to kick a few doors down, but not
You know, you can, like, knock on the door and be like, hi, guys.
Yeah,
hi. Let me in.
I just think, and reading a lot and staying, and, like, going to galleries and watching is, like, going to the theatre. If you live in the countryside, go and see what's happening. Stand-up comedy.
Yeah.
Just see what's out there and, like, be inspired. Or watch old films or listen to interviews. Like, it's just, yeah, I think.
Do you have a favourite old film?
Oh, God.
Good question, sorry. A bit random questions.
Like 90, like 80?
Anything.
So how are we defining old?
I was going to say, how are we defining old?
Or Breakfast at Tiffany's. Is that not super old? But
I mean, like, still like classic. Yeah. Like,
I do like
I love Cassavetes. I love Woman Under the Influence. That was one of my favourite films I didn't mention before.
Yeah.
He's probably one of my favourite directors. But
yeah, he's great.
Yeah. I don't know.
Those are good ones. Yeah, I don't know. What's old? Is Swim Wenders old now?
Something will come to me. Oh, there is something that
there's so many good ones.
I watched Breakfast at Tiffany's way too young.
Like, did you?
I think just wanted to watch it, and I think I was like 4.
Oh.
What? And I remember learning years later.
Oh my God, a cat!
What it was about. Yeah. And I was like, why did you watch that?
Yeah.
I don't know.
It's a good film. I haven't seen that in a few years. Yeah, it's a really good one.
There's another film, but I can't remember the name of it. No.
That's okay. There's so many.
Do you have any like dream roles or projects you'd love to join or
it's so
franchises?
franchises. Football, no. No chance. Definitely not. But dream roles. Everyone always asks this question. I never know how to answer it because you can't. Sometimes you get a script and you're like, "That's my dream role."
Yeah, yeah. I didn't know it until now.
Yeah, but it's that one. Like, do you know what? I've always wanted to play Mrs. Lovett in Sweeney Todd.
I don't think I'm vocally ready for that.
But
well, you did Miss Hannigan in Annie, you're ready.
17-year-old me would love to play her. But
yeah,
I don't know. I feel like I have a big love of independent cinema.
Yeah,
and film and. Yeah, I think I would love to be in like a foreign film, but I can't.
Yeah.
Just like speak French and just be like, you know.
Yeah. That makes sense. Yeah. Also something, I mean, just like Dodger, where there's so much love behind it and there's so much attention.
Yeah. Passion and
exactly.
years of research and it's just done so right.
Yeah.
Like safe hands.
Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Exactly.
Yeah.
Oh. Well, I mean, we're so excited to watch season 2.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
When it comes out.
Yeah. We'll bring you back on season 2.
No, it's
two.
Good.
For us.
Yeah. We can talk about it now.
Yeah.
Well, thank you.
Thank you so much for coming on and joining us today.
Thank you. So cool.
Thank you.
And a big thank you to the Transmissions Roundhouse as well.
Yeah.
Thank you, guys.
Thank you. Transmissions Roundhouse.
He's all looking.